What is happening? Welcome to another episode of the Craft Pitching Podcast. My name is Nick Pollock of Pitcher List, and this week for our guest, I wanted to get somebody that you know, that you actually are like, is he really a guest? And I insist, he is indeed a guest.
Who could it be now?
It's not Eno Saris, but Eno Saris. How you doing, Eno?
Not Eno Saris.
No. No, I didn't even want to say it. I didn't want to put it in my head again.
I've been practicing Shota Imanaga's name.
You've been saying it like that for months now. So you know.
I got a harshly worded rebuke. Every once in a while, I just slip. It happens. You get something wrong in your head once, and then after I corrected you, have called me Inosaurus. So that's all I'm saying. Sometimes we slip back to
How do you pronounce Perez on the Marlins, who just returned from Tommy John? How do you pronounce his name?
Accent? Yeah. Does he have the accent or not? Because they're not. Not everyone name? Has. Yuri.
So Perez. Yuri.
Eerie. Okay.
Yeah. Eerie. Okay. So this is what we do, guys. And by the way, we are live with the podcast right now. Hi, we're on YouTube. And you should definitely be watching this on Wednesdays as we do this. You know, we normally do it around 2:30 p.m. Eastern time on YouTube. It's just way better. And sometimes I have some visuals, and I will probably have a couple visuals today. It's not going to be super smooth with the overlays and all that kind of stuff. But hey, you can get some extra stuff. And what I wanted to talk about today are a lot of the pitchers that are getting opportunities now. We had no game plan for at the beginning of the year. I did the top 400 rankings, and some of these guys were not on there. How did I miss them? I don't know, but that's just how it works. And I wanted to go over these names. I do want to ask two questions first. The first one is, how did you feel about Eury Perez's debut?
I was excited. I know that he didn't show the command that we wanted from him, but you know, there have been some changes to his pitch mix. He added a sinker. He differentiated his slider and curve while he was working. So it used to be the slider and curve was like one's a little bit harder and one's a little bit softer. And now they're like distinctly different pitches. It's almost to the degree where like maybe the curve is sweeper-ish. Like it definitely had more movement than the slider. And so he's got, I would almost describe it as like kind of gyro plus sweeper. Everything's so hard. It's hard to know if those are the right names to get those things.
Yeah,
it could be a power curve and a cutter, or I don't know, but you know, they are very different from each other. And so from a pitch plot standpoint, I liked it. One thing that I also didn't, I did see some of the problems we had with Sandy Alcantara, which is, you know, breaking ball command. And so I'm nervous about how long that will continue. But the stuff was all the way just roaring back, and I might be making the same mistake. At least what we're seeing from Sandy Alcantara is that Sandy Alcantara is coming back around.
Look, I'm the biggest
by Sandy ditching guy. The slider. He's ditched the slider. He can command the curve. And the last two starts, you know, have been the best command plus of the season and location plus of the season. So I think he's figuring out. Okay, I can't throw the slider anymore. I'm a curve change sinker guy.
Very quickly on Sandy, the next three starts are going to be tough ones for him. I know a lot of people are thinking, oh man, after the Rockies and the Pirates, maybe I can't trust this, but it looks so good. Maybe I should go in on it. I'm not going to because of that schedule is not good. And the fact that what made Sandy Alcantara so good prior were two aspects. One, throwing these hard fastballs in spots that induced weak contact in the first place. And two, pairing it with this changeup that was just the deal breaker for hitters. It was just like, I don't know what I'm supposed to do with this. They would roll over it constantly. It's why Sandy would go seven innings and like 80 pitches or something like that. And he would pound these heaters that are hard to hit. And then the secondary would be the changeup to put guys away. The slider and the slider was fine back in the day. It never really was the pitch for him, in my view. It really was that changeup with those fastballs. And both of those are not quite what I want them to be. The velocity's there with the fastballs, but it's not located. It really, really isn't, especially against right-handers. And the changeup is not something he can just go into his back pocket and whip out at 92 and get it down, right? So that is scaring me a little bit. I'm in your camp of saying, yeah, the curveball, I think, is a better option for him than what we saw before. He still had some bad
this
ones with it.
This is Erie, back to Erie.
No, this is all Sandy Alcantara. And I'm in that camp with you of like, it is better what he's trying to do with those, but it's still not quite there. And I do see some parallels here with Erie, because the changeup would be so good. It would be the pitch that he really needs more, I think, even than the slider and curveball, because he's spotting fastballs. Like, watching that game, he didn't get some of these calls, and they were so beautiful, like ran the corner and everything. I even made a meme of that woman who squats and squints. Like, it looked like Erie when he was trying to get a call. Like, the big squat, like, huh? Like, that's supposed to be a strike, and it wasn't. And these at-bats would go on too long because the Pirates were able to at least prepare for 98, 99, and Erie didn't have that extra changeup to keep them honest, really. The slider and curve tried to be at times. Some of them were hung. I remember seeing somewhere like they weren't geared for it, but here's an 80 mile per hour curve that's just kind of up and away, and we'll just doink it to left field for a hit. It's a problem that will hopefully be solved in the future. And who knows? It was the first game. Things can change rapidly, as you'll see with someone else that we're going to talk about later today. And also the guy opposite in this game we're going to maybe be talking about later on. But what is the second thing I wanted to ask you, Ina? Well, the Brewers have a guy. They have this guy named Jacob Mizorowski. And I'm sure you've talked about him on this
Quinn
podcast.
Quinn Priester looks like a stud all of a sudden.
He's part of our list. He's part. We'll get there, Ina. You're going ahead. Got a game plan. Got an agenda. And Jacob Mizorowski, the worry here is that maybe it's a spot start. They didn't have a day off on Thursday, so Mizorowski's there and kind of give everybody that regular rest. There's a very big logjam on the horizon. You have Aaron Civale now going to the bullpen in the five-man. Is this going to last with Jacob Mizorowski? I think we should just be adding him now, regardless, because the skills are so ridiculous. But is this just going to be a hipster situation here? Are we going to really like having Jacob Mizorowski on our teams?
Yeah, the name that I'm thinking about a little bit right now is Mick Abel. Because we liked what Mick Abel did when he first came up, and he's, you know, been pretty good. And then we get the news that Aaron Nola's, you give me this look because I also been talking about somebody else we're going to talk about later, but there is a reason I'm doing it.
He's on the thing later.
I know he's on the rundown.
Good segue. Do it. Go.
But now we're hearing from Aaron Nola that the rib cage is hurt, you know, on top of the ankle. And it's going to be another couple of weeks. And it's like, once you get your shot, there can be reasons why you keep it. And sure. I think if there's any team that might like take a Jacob Mizorowski start and be like, huh, we need this. We can make Quinn Priester a follower. We can do this. We can do this with Civale in the bullpen, whatever it is. Like, Civale in the bullpen's not going to be a one inning guy. Probably he's going to be like a three inning guy. And they've already done some piggybacking, some openers. They're being very fluid about this, this rotation in Milwaukee. That's not always great for fantasy owners, but I do think that there's definitely a window for Jacob Mizorowski to come up. You know, he has surprising command of the four seam, surprisingly low stuff plus on the slider, but he's a four seam curve guy, I think, at his heart. And the curve, he can't always drop in. So I think if it doesn't work, it's because, you know, the curve is the better pitch for action, but he can't necessarily locate it. And he can locate the slider okay, but it's not good for action. And so he doesn't have that like one shining pitch that's great at action and great at location. You know, it's like you'll have to play around with it. But having watched a few of his starts and seen one live, it's whippy. It's interesting. It's high stuff. I think it's hard to pick up. It's an interesting, funky delivery. I think he'll have success from the beginning.
So I have a rule. You do not start pitchers in the MLB debuts. It's just a way to do it. You don't know what you're going to get always. You don't know how adrenaline is going to go. The best example I can give you is that Paul Skeens was terrible in his MLB debut and not fantasy worthwhile. So I'm going to be watching it. I'm going to actually be watching it live on playback.tv/.
But you have to sometimes roster him before that moment anyway.
Oh, you do, but you're going to bench him.
Everybody goes and gets him.
Yeah, you're going to bench him. You should have him and spec Adam just the bench for a stash for a week.
Well, so then the person you drop has to be somebody that you have to be okay with losing, even if you
absolutely
drop Mizorowski the next day.
Right. And also, I mean, you can tell also from that start, right? If it's sometimes you see guys in their MLB debuts and it's like Michael Kopech where it's like, hey, he might get Tommy John surgery now. or it's any something day where it's just, oh my gosh, this is just absolute chaos, like Chase Petty. And you're like, no. We are not going to go with that. Whatever next start he gets, he needs to prove now once that he's not going to throw everything inside or outside the zone. And you might get that with Mizorowski. The one benefit he has, I mean, among many, is that he has 99th percentile extension. Like, this is insane extension, like 7.5, 7.6.
With really good velocity on top of it.
Oh my gosh, 100, which then turns into like 105. Like, it's kind of crazy. So he just needs to throw the dang thing over the plate. And when you're talking about like the stuff of the slider, like, it does not matter really. It could be like a mediocre slider as long as it's not the same speed and not like totally obvious that it's a slider, you know, then it should be fine. So I would even say he could go the whole Garrett Crochet 2024 route of just go cutter sinker if he wants with this fastball, because it just needs to be a different speed, slower, and move slightly. The last two starts of Mizorowski have been worse. He had like a good month of finding the zone constantly with his four seamer. And then last two have come with a lot more erratic fastballs, a lot more non-competitive ones. And I'm curious what it will be tomorrow. My guess is it's going to be like four walks and like five Ks and three innings or something like that. If I had to put something on it. But yeah, he's very much
still have Aaron Civale to like pull back
in the game. Yeah. Aaron Civale honestly would be the great pickup for tomorrow because he'll be the follower.
That's
actually oh gosh, I hate that kind of fantasy baseball play. But you did mention Mick Abel, and at first I think actually gave that look really because I think Mick Abel and Mizorowski are two completely different types of pitchers.
I wasn't making a comparison.
Oh yeah, right. That's why I first was like, huh? Mick Abel? Oh, right. You're totally, you nailed it with, we don't know what this rotation is going to look like in like 2 weeks, 3 weeks.
Yeah.
Oh, how is Sawyer Gibson Long going to find his way into the rotation? Oh, there goes Joe. And that's it, done. There he is. He's in. So with Mick Abel, though, his command is far better than I expected to be, especially with his fastballs. There's still a little bit of work to be done with the slider specifically.
The last game was not his best.
Not at all. And still, I really like Mick Abel, and I would actually say I prefer Mick Abel. If both starters go every five games the rest of the way, I prefer Mick Abel over Jacob Mizorowski. Would you say the same thing?
I think so. First of all, he's, you know, given us major league numbers, which I always prefer. Second of all, it seems like a wider arsenal. He has a four seam and a sinker that he uses, and then he a curve and a slider. So it's a four pitch mix, and all of them rate as above average by Stuff Plus. And you know, the fastball command left him in the last game, but I think that was, I didn't start him. I had him in places before that, and I didn't start him in that one because it's the Cubs are tough. They're a really good offense.
Yeah.
And for him to like, you know, lose command against them, I think is just a little part of confidence. The other thing that's interesting for me is that there is a debut velocity bump. And so I would be careful sometimes for a couple of reasons. One other thing is in a debut, we don't have the arm angle. Arm angle is important in our model. And so we basically impute the arm angle. We have a little mini model that goes in there and guesses what his arm angle is and puts that in. So the day after a debut, you have a guessed arm angle, and then you also have a velocity bump. Mick Abel was 97.3 in his first start, and he's been 95.8 since. Now, that's fine because he was 114.
Still really good. I'll take 96. My gosh.
Yeah, right. And he was 114 stuff in the first ones, and now he's like 106 to 108.
Still gosh. Good, you
know? Yeah. I'm still super excited for him. I do think he's a young guy, so you might want to be careful like against the Cubs or the Yankees or the big offenses. But it looks like he's got a job for the next month at least. And he swung moved ahead of Painter, so he's in.
Yeah, and also Painter's been struggling in AAA, which is kind of, I mean, it's not much that we've seen thus far, but he's not all of a sudden banging the table, get him up like Bubba Chandler or something like that.
Yeah, it's a new zone, and the home run rate is expanding. Probably, maybe because he has to be more, you know, fine in the zone. Maybe he can't expand the zone above the zone like he could at other levels.
Mm.
Painter. I like Painter a lot, but I think that they're waiting for another big move. I don't think they want to bring him up for like a spot start.
Oh yeah, no, they said post All-Star break, like kind of hinting at the first homestand after that for Painter. We'll see where he's at. You know, the assumption that he's going to be completely amazing and good leading up to it, maybe he isn't as safe. We'll see what happens there. But we want to talk more about the guys that aren't getting as much attention. And I'm just going to get one out of the way because it's probably the last one that's like a major name. Is I hinted at him before. Sawyer Gibson Long also has that 99th percentile. We saw a brand new version of him last night. You know, I don't know how much of this you're able to catch, and it's a brand new version who doesn't get a win when they should. No, it's someone who is throwing all of a sudden hitting 96 on his four seamer, 94, 95, and not 92 to 93. He also is introducing a cutter now with a heavy focus on that changeup to lefties, as he didn't face that many righties. But Sawyer Gibson Long at 94 on this four-seamer to lefties with a flat attack angle, then having this sinker at 93 that turns out against right-handers, and a disgusting changeup that he leaned on heavily with a cutter to mix in too against lefties, and then sometimes a slider. This feels like a reliable 6-7 inning guy the moment that he's properly stretched out, which could be just in two games or so.
Is that why he's being limited? I mean, it was 70 pitches in his first outing, and then he went down to 51 pitches.
I don't know. He got pulled with one more out, I believe, in the eighth inning, and I don't know why, but it's strange that they're just being careful out of the gate. But yeah,
that bothers me though, because the Tigers are again another team like the Brewers that are willing to, you know, pitch a guy for four innings in the middle of the game, you know?
Sure.
And you know, I like the velo bump, and if this velo bump holds, then he is more exciting than my comp for him. My comp is, again, off the list. I know I'm a bad person. Steven Kolek.
Oh, Kolek is your Long. Oh man.
They just have
not
very
the person I would have thought of comparing Sawyer Gibson Long to.
They are, they have almost identically the same arm angle, around 30 degrees. Kolek's four seam is a little bit different. Gibson Long's four seam is, you know, a pitch that has tail, whereas mm-hmm. Steven Kolek kind of cuts his four seam a little bit, but yes. They're low slot sinker, slider guys with multiple sliders. They both have cutters, multiple fastballs. I think Gibson Long is better, but I think they're very comparable. The difference is Kolek is stretched out and pitching in games. The way that rotation goes, I think we had Dennis Lynn on Rates and Barrels, and we asked him to pick among, you know, Vasquez, Kolek, Bergert.
Bergert. Is it with the hard G or soft G? I actually don't know this.
We had him on the show, and I can't remember how he said it, but he said that he thinks Kolek stays in above Vasquez, which maybe makes sense because Vasquez's peripherals are just awful.
I mean, I do agree with that. That Bergert does get it, and no, I have not been able to find it. Yes, it's Bergert, like yogurt. Okay, cool.
Yeah, yeah.
And it does. I'm going to push back about Kolek versus Sawyer Gibson Long. I do think that Sawyer Gibson is more changeup focused than Kolek is, and also having over a foot more extension completely transforms him as a pitcher, where he's able to get these more awkward swings on these low sinkers. And he has 82nd percentile on drop on sinkers right now. Sawyer Gibson Long throwing that extension and that good ability to get it low. He actually isn't trying to focus like Kolek is on going inside to these righties. He's just trying to get it down. And then you have a major focus yesterday against lefties in that game against the Orioles. What we saw were 17 changeups and six whiffs on them. and it was pretty dang filthy. I think they're a little bit different this way, but I do hear what you're saying about the lower arm slot, and also especially what the Tigers are doing, and maybe they choose to do Brant Herder plus Sawyer Gibson Long, a lefty to a righty, and really be protective of Gibson Long and his and coming back from the surgery. But dang, I mean, this is what bothers me about it, is that he went nearly five innings on 51 pitches. He is made to be efficient, you know?
Yeah.
He's exactly the kind of guy that you don't really need to be going max effort and save for like four or five innings. Like, you actually want him to be starting so that he potentially goes seven for you. And it's not quite the mold that I would normally suggest for this, but I sure hope they don't do that to Sawyer Gibson Long.
He gets Sawyer Gibson Long gets Cincinnati on Sunday. I'd do that. That's at home.
Oh, the Reds carpet where everybody focuses on you as you stroll down. Oh my God.
And then at Tampa, I'd use him for that too, but I would, my likelihood of using him goes down with every start that he doesn't start. He's a follower or goes like three or four innings.
Okay. So I can hear the voice right now. They say, but that's a better chance at a win. How do you feel about that?
If he follows.
Yes.
Yeah, but if he starts and goes four, then it's the worst chance.
Well, yeah, well,
I hate the win rule.
Well, that's what I'd say, though. If they are going to start him, they aren't going to go four. If they're going to go four, they're going to open for him, right?
Right.
You would think. So I'm good on Sawyer Gibson Long. I'm excited about this. I'm curious what happens when he faces more righties than lefties, because it was a big change of focus last night for him. But we're actually going to get to the meat and potatoes of this one. All these guys that you don't really know who they are, like Ryan Burgert. And we're going to talk about Jacob Latz. Who is that? And some guys in the White Sox. Once again, we got to talk about these guys. And definitely not Tyler McGill. You know him, okay? Definitely not him. But we're going to talk about everybody else.
Talk about him enough.
After this break. Okay, so Ina, what I did is I went through all rotations and I sent them to you and I said, look, these are all the guys who are just kind of these randos who are making starts, right? These are the ones that people, if we say their names, they're like, oh yeah, is that guy good or not? I think I've heard him a couple of times. I'm not really familiar with him. And I wanted to just get a chance for us to identify, hey, look, these are the ones that we are focusing on. So I'm going to just go straight to the White Sox quickly. There are two big names. One I think that everyone knows, which is Shane Smith. And there's another one who has a new cutter and is kind of doing great right now. And I'll save who that is. But first is Shane Smith. Do you buy what he's doing right now? What I've seen is a harder velocity that has stuck through innings as he's gone further. But I'm still a little bit skeptical of the slider and changeup maintaining these results moving forward, as I don't really think they're as good and consistent as the bottom line has been.
Yeah, Stepless likes the changeup.
Oh, yeah. The kick change looks really pretty.
Yeah, and in terms of, movement, it might actually be getting better. Like, there's days where he flashes plus fade on it. And it's a hard one, so it's a 90, 91 mile an hour changeup. I tend to think that it's a good pitch. What has been improving for him is the slider stuff. Plus, he started the season, Shane Smith did, with sub 100 on the slider. And since May 5th, he's had a different number on that. I can't necessarily see why. I guess he's gone from 88 to 90 on the pitch and made it just a harder slider. And I guess that actually can be all it is, because it's a kind of a gyro slider. It doesn't stand out because of movement in any way. It's almost a 0-0 gyro slider. So every tick he can throw that thing harder, the better it gets, mostly because it looks like a fastball. I don't know if you saw the Stephen Sutton Brown stuff where he was using the hitting stats to kind of do this, to show this, but the more the slider looks like the fastball, the better it is for whiffs. I think you have a good solid foundation of a good fastball, a good changeup, and a slider that's getting better. I'm into him. I don't really have that many shares because I thought he was just a fastball to begin with. But if you just look at some simple things like strikeouts minus walks, and what he's been since the slider's gotten harder. He looks like a pretty good pitcher. Since he started throwing the slider harder, he has a 9.5 K9, so 38 strikeouts in 36 innings against 15 walks. Still a little bit too many walks, but a 2.50 ERA. And no real bad games. I mean, one game against the Mets that he lost his command.
And that was also the rain. Yeah, we messed that one up. That was also Griffin Canning there too in Citi Field. I would honestly say I think just velocity overall has improved. Is one of the things that we saw earlier in the season for Shane Smith was limited innings, and he would get gassed after the third inning or fourth inning. And I've been really nailing it on, hey, look, I know you can throw 96, but are you going to hold 96? And he was at 94 earlier on and then started creeping up. And now we're actually at sitting 96 average throughout an entire start. So that seems to me it's not just that four-seamer. It is that slider that's gained that benefit in the changeup as well. But we aren't really seeing successful marks on that slider over the last seven games. Combined, it's just a 11.5 swing strike rate. Sub 20% CSW on it and a 50% ICR. So the contact that's being allowed, half of it is good for hitters. And you generally see that for sliders, like 30-35%. So not great there. PLV in that time is just 4.82. And that combines, of course, location.
Low average pitch, yeah.
So not ideal there, but the fastball is effective. And the changeup can be effective. And I think there's just something else kind of going on.
It's like a Tobias Myers. Tobias Myers with a little bit more velo.
Does he have maybe the same vert that Tobias Myers had? That was always.
I'm just saying, like fastball changeup guy who.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Yeah.
Doesn't use the changeup like that much. Like doesn't use it. There are fastball changeup guys like Paddock, who he'll use the changeup 30-40% of the time. You know,
right?
You know, Shane Smith is more like a 20% changeup guy. It's a good changeup. It's a good fastball. He hasn't figured out the breaking ball mix yet.
Now you're just making me sad that Myers is hurt and never got a chance to really, really start using the changeup more, because it was the most coin flip pitch, I think. I'm like, oh, that is so filthy. Oh, God, that is terrible. Stop throwing that thing. And then you just get so excited for like the three other ones he throws.
The case for his teammate Davis Martin, I think, is interesting too. You've got a similar fulcrum where you're like, oh, after this date, he did something different. After this date, he's been what, right? And so he really started using the cutter May 3rd
against
Houston. And since that day, he has a 3.92 ERA. It's like the Shane Smith thing, it's just not as good. You know, he's a 3.92 ERA, he's had two bad games and a third that wasn't great. His strikeout rate is 27 strikeouts in 41 innings. Ooh. So for me, like in 15 teamers, Davis Martin, and we have him in the main event. We've used him. We'd like him in two start weeks and stuff. And he's really like a weekly debate for us where we're like, is this week we're going to drop him? You know, is he above the cut line or is he not? You know,
that's what a Toby is. You know, that's the definition.
Yeah. And if I was a 10 or 12 team league, I would only use him for his good starts and move on. But in a 15 team league, he's right there where, maybe look at next week's matchups. If you don't want him this week, I would say if you don't want to pitch him this week and you don't want to pitch him next week, then you might as well move on.
Yeah, what are you doing? Yeah. One thing I will say about Davis Martin, that last start against the Kansas City Royals, is the cutter. The cutter has just been a very effective pitch for him. And pairing it with a four-seamer upstairs and actually locating that well, like he did there, really worked out well for him. Lots of strikes, nearly 70% on it. Little hard contact. Allowed the cutter was able to dance a little bit outside more than usual because of it. The changeup came alive too in that start. For a lot of strikes and a fair amount of CSW as well, 33% CSW over 21 thrown. You can see how the command is coming together a bit for Davis Martin, and he's understanding, cool, this is how my cutter works against lefties. It's more up as a Canwell McSanchez thing, and then I've got the changeup off of that. And then against righties, I'm going to throw this four-seamer here and cutter off of that, and so on. And so there's that pitchability that I feel as if Davis Martin is executing them has made it work a little bit more than I expected, certainly. And it sounds like you do as well. But
I'm a little bit nervous about somebody with that low of a strikeout rate.
I can understand that. I don't think he's necessarily 16%. He just fans 7. But it's been a lot of twos and threes, and that's not really something you have to hold on to and go after in your 12 teamers.
Especially because they're not going to give him a lot of wins.
Very true. Slade Sissoni got a win last night, but it was against the Reds Carpi. He had 8 strikeouts, and I remember Slade being
gotta
somebody.
Be Sicconi.
Sicconi. It is Sicconi.
Okay.
All right. We got this one. Thank you, Eno.
Hopefully.
And do you believe what he's doing as he's getting an opportunity with the Guardian Slade, or should we just kind of move on from that?
I think he's a bad fastball guy with good secondaries. The changeup has been better with his new team with the Guardians. I think Sicconi's changeup is an actual thing he can use as an actual weapon. So it's like curve change with an okay slider and bad fastballs. And this is the kind of pitcher that the Guardians in the past have done really well with. But also this year, their rotation is like 22nd in WAR. It's projected to be like 24th going forward. Like, I wrote something recently where I said this used to be a pitching factory and now the gears are grinding to a halt. I don't know if that's fair because I like Tanner Bibee and Gavin Williams some, but this is the type of pitcher that the Guardians used to turn into just like, oh, who's this? Oh, of course, they got another one. And I don't know. I don't know if I believe fully.
I don't believe it about the
league.
I'm not really in on this. But I am going to ask you about the Astros, because the Astros every year feel like they have something in the water that makes it some guy just all of a sudden is a good pitcher. And we're like, wait, hold on a second. And they have 3 names this year who have come up and had any sort of success. It's Ryan Gusto, Colton Gordon, and Brandon Walter. And by the way, yes, that is 5 first names and only 1 last name.
And the one last name, Gusto, is just a great one.
It's just, that's not me adding emphasis, okay? And of those 3, of Gusto and Gordon and Walter, is there one that you feel actually has that ability to be that major guy for Houston? Or are all of them not really arms that you think we should be focusing on?
I think that Gusto is a reliever. Every time he pushes his, the batter's face past 20, the stuff plus on his fastball goes down. And his fastball is his best pitch. He's kind of like, I think that he's just, he reminds me a little bit of Ryan Nelson, where he's got this good fastball. There's times you can tell yourself a story. You're like, oh, the slider's getting with the curve of this. Oh, look what he did here. And you can tell yourself a story and you can get into it. But what ends up happening when you look back on Ryan Nelson's career is he's somewhere in between a reliever and a starter. Maybe now he's finally doing it again. Tell yourself that story again. Ryan Nelson, here he comes. I feel like Gusto is just going to be frustrating in that way. The guy I like the most is Gordon. And I will tell you this. I think he has no ceiling. I do not.
It's just infinite. You just open up and you see the stars.
No. Like it's like a Hobbit house. Okay, this is a deep league play. Although the reason I like him is he has this big slow slider and people bail on it all the time. And I think what he's doing is almost pitching off of that, where he's using the slider as this main pitch that is surprisingly effective, even though he's going opposite handed on it. He can do back door, he can do back foot, and then he's playing all this other stuff, the fastball, the curveball, the changeup, all off the slider. And he's just not, he's got really good command, and he's going to give up some homers because the stuff is not excellent, 91 mile an hour. But there's something about this kind of soft tossing lefty. He fits into that, like, there's a whole history of soft tossing lefties that have made it work. And I think he's just one of them,
Yeah. So what's kind of funny to me is you could bucket Brandon Walter into that too. Mm. I call him a harder throwing Ryan Yarbrough. Because he really focuses on cutters and sweepers and changeups. And that cutter's at 88 and the sweeper's at 79, 80 miles per hour, and the changeup's at 81. And he's just kind of hoping he gets a lot of right-handers and just keeps us away with the cutter coming inside. Hey, don't cheat out too far away now. Okay, thank you so much. And I can see how that works. What is going to surprise you is Brandon Walter's PLV is seventh best of all starting pitchers given the 11 inning sample.
And then you have
Colton Gordon's, who's fifth best at 529.
The Yarbrough comp is really great though, because you know Ryan Yarbrough surprisingly has a 102 stuff plus, even though an 88 mile an hour thing, and right. Walter's stuff plus is better than Gordon's, and you know that's despite a 91 mile an hour one. So maybe I got it wrong. Maybe it is Walter. But between the two of those, I'm not
saying that at all. I'm just marveling, and I know why it's so high. PLV, I'm
both
sure
of them have great command.
Is well, at first, yeah, they're locating strikes at least with these secondary pitches, especially the cutter. The cutter has a 5.69 PLV because it is an 82% strike rate, and it's a cutter. And then they both throw at least a quarter sweepers. And PLV and like stuff plus will always love us.
I mean, that's the weird thing. I mean, that's one thing they have in common with Chris Bubich, which is you're throwing these opposite handed sweepers. You're not supposed to do that. It's supposed to be bad for platoons. But I think there's something about a lefty throwing it. I think that hitters bail on it. Doesn't look like it's ever a strike, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good point. Because, I mean, you see JP Sears do that all day. You know, not to say that JP Sears is having massive success, but he certainly has.
But like you would never tell him to throw a sweeper. Oh. I would like JP Sears throwing a sweeper is like this the wrong arm slot. He's a lefty. He's throwing it to righties. Like, why are you doing it? And he's finding some success with it. So maybe there's a little bit of a difference. Lefties throwing sweepers to righties. And then also I've been like researching into the fact that righties are doing worse against lefties this year than they ever have.
Change up
as hitters. I thought seam effects, that's what Robbie Ray thought. Robbie Ray thought seam effects, changeups, people were improving their changeups, pitch design, that sort of stuff. I asked Austin Riley, though, and Austin Riley said fewer lefties than ever before. You just don't see them as much. And there's got to be some truth to that because the three batter rule really eliminated loogies. You used to be able to have lefty one-out guys.
Yeah.
And I have to look at it historically. I haven't looked at it yet, but the number of pitches seen by lefties is down to like 23%. And I think it used to be around 30%.
Mm-hmm.
So if it is true that we're down that much, then that could be part of it. And then, you know, I got yelled at for my Bubich ranking. Maybe I'm just still undervaluing lefties a little bit.
Andrew Abbott just had a complete game shutout against the Guardians.
Jesus.
I thought of you. I thought of you so much during that because we burned the same way of this. We don't quite get it. You know?
I got added on social media.
Oh my gosh.
In the Discord, somebody posted the Michael Jordan and I took that personally.
I mean, the one guy that apparently read it has turned me into, I mean, actually, I'm curious, you know, if you had to put me as the blank guy for this year, as like the pitcher that I'm most associated with in your head for 2025, who would you say that is?
Sorry, Gibson Long.
Sorry, Gibson Long. Oh, that's a good one. I'll take that one. Okay. Reddit has decided it's Lucas Giolito. And I'm like, I get why, but so he did well last night, and they're, you know, I'm sure that they're just so upset. I took that personally. Like, I texted you the lead. I'm like, you need to do something for me. Thank you so much.
Yeah, right. You need to pitch well. Thank you.
And I sent him
like they don't get it all that.
He says, I only like tulips. I'm like, what? You didn't tell me that. It's kind of funny how that works like that. It's just, hey, we don't see it that way. Sometimes they do better. Sometimes they do worse. Abbott is a strange one, but it would make sense in what you're saying about lefties just kind of being better. And these fastballs that we think don't do well, or they shouldn't as a lefty, they can get away with it at 92, 93 with those locations. We've seen Lodolo do that for a while. And it's kind of makes sense. But then you have Luzardo going 20 earned runs in two games. And then now he just took down the Cubs. So welcome to baseball, everybody. All right.
I wasn't super familiar with Walter's game. So thank you for putting him on the rundown. And I might have him a little bit ahead of Gordon, but I like both those lefties. And I think that Gusto could go back to the pen, especially because you could use Gusto behind Walter and Gordon pretty effectively. Because
different guys mixing and matching that. Definitely.
And then, and you just basically have Gusto as your, in case of emergency, break glass. And, you know, if Walter or Gordon are just being hit around a little bit, or before they get hit around too much, you throw them in.
Right. Well, we've got more interesting ones, and I'm going to, I think, surprise Eno with some names that I still get them confused. And I'm like, are these actually two different pitchers? And we're going to talk about the two Jacobs after this break. Are you familiar with Jacob Lopez and Jacob Latz? These are also left-handers. And you're like, who's Jacob Latz? I'm like, oh, well, speaking of Jordan, it's The Last Dance. But he's a guy with the Rangers. And Jacob Lopez is with the Athletics. With the situation right now with Texas, Eovaldi doesn't look ready to come back this week, which means we're likely going to get another start of Jacob Latz. He only went 3.1 innings in his last outing. However, he struck out 7, which should not be overlooked. He looked a lot different than his time in relief, but really that's Blake Snell blueprint, 94, 95 of four-seamers that are good upstairs, and then really good changeups downstairs. When he was relieving, those changeups would be just missed arm side all the time. There's some intrigue there. He gets the White Sox. And then there's Jacob Lopez, who, yes, he had a 7-run game and a 5-run game, but he had 9 strikeouts in that 5-run game and then had 91 pitches of 0 earned runs against Baltimore, save, you know, of course, 4 innings. Is there anything that you've seen from these two that say, hey, look, actually, these guys should be on your radar?
I got nothing for Lopez, man. I think that home park is just a mess. I think
with the mound being harder as well.
Oh my God. I can't, the list of things that's wrong with that park, and just the wind, and we haven't even gotten to really, it's going to be 98 at game time, even at nighttime in Sacramento soon. So I don't want any part of that smoke. There's nothing that really stands out for me stuff wise. I'm looking at Jacob Latz's, you know, 18.7 inch vertical break on his four seam.
Yeah.
It is a high arm angle at 49, but, you know, I think this is also more of a rarity from the left side. People think of lefties as more having that 30 to 35 degree arm angle, even lower.
Yep.
Yeah. The 49 from that left side is a fairly unique release point by itself. And then just having a four seam, that sort of quality that's not a sinker means that he's got a forcing that he can attack righties with. And then, you know, having a three pitch mix that looks pretty good across the board. And, you know, I don't know, you know, it is a little bit more fastball centric, you know, but the slider rates at least is above average. And the changeup this year rates is above average. And I think that Latz has done some work on that change piece because you see, you know, it has 2 inches more break vertically and a little bit more horizontally this year. So I think the forcing the changeup or the good pitches, the slider and the curveball are good enough. I'm in on Latz. And I think that the team context here is such that, like, this team is going to poop or get off the potty in the next couple of weeks. And
okay. So
and
I love how Eno censors himself for this podcast. That's all I'm laughing about here.
You don't like the cuss words.
I know. What I generally like is just any vulgarity or hinting at it in general.
Oh, so you don't even like if I say poop?
Just it's
poop,
so
poop, 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 poop.
The way
poop,
you're phrasing poop, it is so
poop, poop, poop.
You don't need to do this. They need to make up their mind is a good phrase, Mr. Writer.
No, but pooper get off the body. Anyone who's not a kid knows all about this one.
Anyway, yeah, they're going to have to make a decision at the trade deadline. You might see Jacob Latz getting more opportunities when they do trade someone away.
100%. That's it. Tyler Mahle is a impending free agent. If they decide the selling, they will jettison him. I don't know if anybody wants Patrick Corbin. but he's also an impending free agent and he's super cheap. I could even see if it's a team like the Padres that are just like, we have no money, you know.
Hey, we'll I have a question for you. Question, pop quiz. How many games this year has Patrick Corbin allowed more than 300 runs?
Oh my God. Listen, my heart wants to say 10. Yeah. But my head says 2.
0.
Jesus.
But he hasn't gone 6 innings every time. But he hasn't had a game over 300 runs yet.
I think I would acquire him to be kind of a bulk lefty. It'd be something I would want to like pair him with somebody. I think, you know, him with Kolek would be pretty interesting in San Diego. You know, him with Vasquez, even he might be able to get more out of Vasquez and stave off the regression monster. Anyway, sure. Jacob Latz, I'm in.
Okay. The main thing with Jacob Latz is I love that start of that changeup down. He needs to get stretched out too as well. So like this week, probably only be like 70 pitches if he does make that start, 75, even though some White Sox might not last that long because he isn't really the efficient guy with the changeup yet, I don't think. And I'm worried that we're going to see just a bad changeup. It's going to be so reliant on that four-seamer, which can still work, absolutely. I think you make a phenomenal point about the arm angle being unique for a lefty that I hadn't really considered before. So I'm curious to see how that develops. But yeah, we should definitely have an eye on him with Jacob Lopez. I think this is the thing that I am certainly more biased towards, I think, than you. And correct me, please.
He has extension. Tell me he's extension.
7.1 feet, baby. Oh,
God. You cannot build a house on extension alone.
I know you can't do it on a house. I'm not saying I'm in on Jacob Lopez. I'm just saying he has something in that. Yeah. Extension is a very good real thing when you throw four seamers and cutters from the left side and you try to dance off the plate with it and they can't tell the difference between the two. Less time for it to happen and it you know, the tunneling happens at a later time, so there you cannot decide to swing or not. But obviously, yes, Jacob Lopez is not someone to jump at, and I prefer Latz of the two. But try to remember who is who. I mean, they're both Jacob L something Z. So good luck, everyone. Right. One is at, one is Opie. Is that almost an Opie and Anthony joke? Okay. So close. All right. We have other guys we got to talk about here. So I'm going to go through them as fast as I can. All right. We have quickly, we just got to mention Jose Soriano. I got a text from Eno last night. I was like, when I finally dump him, Jose Soriano has to have an amazing
day. When I finally give up on him. I mean, I was
appreciate
pointing
you
out
doing that for all of us then.
Best velocity of the year. You were pointing out the shape was even better on the sinker, and then the command was just excellent. And what's really funny is that location plus and these games that he has, I think you're showing right now the game chart for his last game for yesterday.
Yes.
The what's funny is location plus says he's had great location all year. And this is just not who I had in my head this year. I had a guy in my head, a guy who's going to blow everybody away, have shaky command. This is who he's been in the past. This year, he's not been blowing people away, and the results numbers don't suggest he has great command, but location says he's great. And then look at this game, that all the sinkers are just down to lefties, just down all like that is dotting him. And then against righties, he's going in on their hands, and that's great location.
He had 16 whiffs on his sinker. And Eno and I both know here, you do not see swing and miss on sinkers unless it's Josh Hader's, and that's whatever. That's not really a sinker, right? Not the one that we really think of. This is one with legit, I want to say it's like 95th percentile drop on it that he actually located down. And of course, as you mentioned, super hard. So Soriano had a night, and I'm sad to say I don't think he's going to have a night like this again soon. I could be wrong, but generally we do see these incredible games. I remember actually interviewing Asher Wojciechowski with Alex Fast over the, I think it was 2020, and he had this great game in 2019, and we're like, oh man, you had this really good game with your curveball and your cutter, and you know, are you trying to like, you know, what happened there, and were you trying to latch onto? He goes, oh yeah, that was a really good day, wasn't it? And we're like, oh, okay. So like that's not sustainable. Got it. Yeah. You know,
Soriano's next one is like if you go and like hey, I'm going to add him. He does have a two-step, but it's the Yankees in Yankee Stadium. It's like, I hate
Yeah, well,
that.
That's the thing about Soriano, right? It's like, you still don't want to go for that one. And look, you can, this is actually a really good thing because you can actually take the chance without taking the chance because other people likely won't pick him up for that one. And then you can monitor, did he have his sinker down? Was it the same drop that he added an extra 2 to 3 inches of it? Right. If it is, then the skills are still present. And then you can be more confident making the ad and getting a better matchup in Jose Soriano's next outing, which would be the Astros. And I'm fine with that if he has everything going there. So, and then it would be the Nationals after it. And I think that's okay too. But moving on, because we've got this long list. You'd mentioned the Padres, Stephen Kolek and Ryan Burgert. Do you have a preference of either one of those two guys?
Yeah, it's Kolek. I think Kolek has the Michael King starter package. It's just the you know, sinker slider reliever who's adding stuff onto it to make it work against lefties. And I think he has enough command to make it work against lefties. I've been really impressed with him. I think it's not a high ceiling outcome, but if you were interested in like a Wesnensky or somebody, I mean, Wesnensky's a little bit higher arm slot. It's not an exact comp, but if you're interested in like Clark Schmidt, why shouldn't you be interested in Kolek? You know, and maybe it goes Sawyer Gibson Long, Clark Schmidt, you know, Stephen Kolek in terms of rankings, but I don't think they're that far off each other, and they all strike me as similar pitchers.
So I've not rated Kolek's whiff ability as high as those, right? I mean, what we've seen so far is just an 8% overall swing strike rate. I'm not seeing a single pitch in his arsenal that has a 13% plus swing strike rate thus far. And when you talk about like Wisniewski, he had the big sweeper. That was the big out pitch for him. With Schmidt, it's a variety of them. You could say it's the curve, it's the sweeper.
Yeah, that's true. It's a little bit more diminished stuff than those guys. I would agree.
So that to me is what making, as you mentioned, like the ceiling not being so high.
But the sinker is really good. The sinker is really good. He has a 57% ground ball rate. He's had great ground ball rates in the minors. So I think he's a low ceiling, low slot righty.
Yeah. So the sinker, absolutely. It's a great point there. He has 17 inches of horizontal movement, which is 65th percentile. And its drop is 79th percentile. So it's a good two plane sinker. Throws a lot of strikes with it. It's over 70%, and it is a 77% ground ball rate thus far for Kolek's sinker.
He's really
it does
usable.
Mean he's allowed hits on it because he is allowing ball to play on it, and it's not really a put away offering. We have a mistake rate at 12%, which is 17th percentile among all sinkers for starting pitchers, which isn't great. That means it's a double the chance of allowing a hit. So 12% of them are that double chance. But I do understand how that can turn into an efficient arm and get through games without having the walk problems of others. Even though he has a 9% walk rate, that's another story that should be lower in the future.
He's had lower numbers in the past.
Yeah, I would say Burgert is at least a little more interesting because he does have 18 inches of vert. He does have a flat attack angle. He throws 94 and he has proper intent at least to go upstairs. We've seen very little of him in the rotation thus far. It's only been 2 games. And I've seen these moments of that slider looking really good at 88 miles per hour down in glove side. It's not polished. I think Kolek is the better strike earner and clearly is able and capable to get through 5-6 innings more consistently. But if you're thinking about a guy that says, hey, look, if he takes the best parts of him and actually makes that reliable, I think Burgert has more to work with in that department. But if you're talking about like the rest of the season, yeah, it's probably going to be Kolek as a producer.
I think Burgert strikes me as maybe as a future reliever. The reason is that, you know, with his arm slot at 51 degrees, the vertical he's getting there, you know, from the right side, this is not as unique. I mean, it's a little bit Pivetta-esque from the fastball standpoint. And I don't think his breaking balls are as good. And, you know, Pivetta's been really leaning into the curveball usage. Burgert throws the slider a lot, and he throws along with the sweeper. He's kind of a 50-50 pitcher there. But as a righty, you know, is the sweeper helpful for him against lefties? When I've watched a couple of his starts, it looks to me like I'm surprised that he's been a starter in the minors. Like, I'm like, oh, this is a righty fastball slider guy that they're stretching out. That's been my not even looking at the numbers assessment. You know what I mean?
Yeah, so sure. That's
my sort of scouting. So I haven't been that interested in him.
Yep. I wouldn't suggest chasing him either in 15 teamers. I am curious to see if he can really solidify the Blake Snell blueprint of four seamers upstairs and sliders down, because I do think he has the mold for it. But it's not quite as a good of a two pitch mix as we've seen many others inside the league have success with. And we really need to see a little bit more in the changeup or the sweeper, really. You only thrown it 6% of the time this season, that sweeper. So we'll see what happens there. We're almost out of them. I know there's so many of these guys, but we got to get to the back to the Brewers for a second. There's Quinn Priester and Chad Patrick. And Quinn Priester just had a fantastic game against Atlanta. 7 strikeouts yesterday in 6 innings, 6 hits, 1 earned run, no walks. And to me, it's been, hey, here's my slider, pretty good. Here's a sinker over the plate, and don't hit it too hard. And I have a developing cutter. I believe it's a cutter, not the changeup. It's a cutter that is utilized against lefties, has been effective. And that's it. Is there something else I'm missing there? And do you think this is sustainable for 15 teamers and or 12 teamers?
I'm interested in him in 15 teamers. Him and Patrick, I think, are one of the better. His teammate Chad Patrick are some of the better pickups for 15 teamers for slightly different reasons. Patrick is, you know, like, I have 8 fastballs. I think he's like a new Lance Lynn kind of. And Quinn Priester is a sinker slider guy. And yeah, I mean, he threw 30% cutters in that Atlanta game. And I think that could be a huge thing for him. But he also threw 30% of cutters early in the season and had a less success. He actually had pretty good success then. So, you know, if he's cutter, sinker, slider, I think it could be enough. And, you know, in terms of what's happening on the probables grid, you know, for him, we've got St. Louis at home, and he misses the Chicago series, and he gets at Minnesota. I want him for those starts. I like him coming up, and that means probably the week after he gets Minnesota is a 2-start week, and they've started to use him more as a traditional starter as opposed to, you know, he was having openers and stuff. So yeah, that's why I like Quinn Priester. In terms of Chad Patrick, I just see, you know, 3 usable fastballs, and you know, there could be some gusto ish problems here where it's like, what is the secondary? You know, what are you focusing on secondary wise? Do you lose too much stuff if they really start stretching you out? But I've seen enough where he's done these 6 inning starts, Chad Patrick has, and he's kept his stuff high on his fastballs. So it is amazing when you see a guy do what he did against the Padres and throw literally 9% secondaries.
Yeah, he does. It's Cutterville. It is absolutely Cutterville with Chad Patrick. It's a very good pitch. Sometimes the 4-seamer is also there and can go upstairs and actually get some whiffs. We've seen that. But otherwise, it's just, hey, here's my cutter, and I'm going to hope either that you can't touch this thing, or if you do, it becomes an out in play. Changeup and slider are 10% usage over the cross or across this season. However, I think that cutter is a better foundation than what Priester has. I've seen games where that slider looks really good to righties. I worry about the sinker a lot from Priester. I don't think it's a very good pitch. I think yesterday while watching, he allowed 6 hits on it, and he got kind of fortunate of when those happened that he only allowed 1 run. It's a foundational offering for him. And that worries me a lot for volatility with Priester. But I mean, I don't really love either one for a 12-teamer. I get it for 15. I think Chad Patrick, honestly, just because the cutter's thrown half the time.
The cutter's even getting better for Patrick.
Yeah,
it's more really glove side movement.
And it does think that there's nothing else, and maybe the 4-seamer does become a better complement over time. I don't know how much I like the sinker, and I don't like that he uses it mostly glove side as opposed to arm side. He tries to backdoor it against right-handers a ton, and he tries to do some front hip stuff to lefties. I'm like, is that really the way to go? That cutter will allow him to get through five innings. He does have these tendencies of getting pulled a little earlier, I think, than Priester. The Brewers are like, okay, it's the fifth inning now. They need something else that's not the cutter. We got to pull you now.
Guys are, you know, could just the next time out do four innings, not get a win. You know, maybe it keeps their earned runs down, but it keeps their win ceilings. It is interesting. Of all the names we've said today, like, who's a 10 or 12 team pickup?
Sorry, Gibson Long.
Gibson Long, Brandon Walter. I would Walter, say Gibson Long is
Shane Smith, Mick Abel. Shane Smith. Mizorowski. Now, I didn't touch on Emerson Hancock, who I don't think is. If you give him enough runway through the full year, which might happen because of Bryce Miller being whatever, you might actually get there with Hancock as he leans more to the changeup, finds out how to utilize the slider better, and then is able to manipulate his fastballs properly so that they don't get hit. But not now. David Festa is on this, and we haven't talked about him. I think eventually he is, but honestly, I don't trust David Festa's command right now at all. He has not executed all three of those pitches, four seamers, sliders, and changeups, well in tandem. And it bothers me a lot. I'm curious if you would suggest David Festa and 12 teamers.
Well, I mean, another thing that I think bothers me is their usage of him.
Great point.
Although they were using Zebby Matthews similarly, and then they let him go seven, and then he got hurt. But I suppose he could make the case with better pitching for going deeper into games. I thought it was a two-pitch mix, really, for Festa, and he's really leaned into being a three-pitch mix. But he hasn't faced 20 batters in an outing yet. And so that makes it hard for me in 10 and 12 teams. In 15 teams, if I'm sort of prospecting for the future and hoping he turns the corner, there's a lot to like there in terms of the fastball is pretty good quality. And the slider and changer, you know, are decent, and they can work off of that fastball. So if he can figure something out in the command department, there is a fair amount of upside here. I think his upside belongs on your list. In terms of like week to week management of a team, am I want to put Festa in for three innings this week?
Yeah.
In terms of ceiling of all the guys we've mentioned, I think the three highest ceilings for me of the entire group we talked about are actually Jose Soriano, just getting it together. You know, he's shown us in the past he can have really excellent stuff. He has a wider mix than he even used this year. So I'm going to put
it. Oh, yeah. I mean, he didn't need the slider yesterday because it was just curveballs were amazing. Sinkers were amazing. Like, that's fine.
Yeah. So, and then Mick Abel and Jacob Mizorowski as young pitchers that have scouting pedigree and are coming up. And then I'd put Festa in that group with the highest ceilings on this group. And I'd put a Dodger on here that we haven't talked about. Ben Kasparius, if he had the role. Yeah. I think he has the upside of all these guys. I really love his resume. I love his arsenal in terms of he has multiple breaking balls, high, hard stuff. He can do it. And the command, I think command concerns are overblown a little bit. So the problem is they don't believe in him, it looks like. I mean,
they actually just said a quote today that they're going to try and start stretching him out.
I want that. I think he's better than Robleski.
You'll be happy then. Because I think he has a higher
ceiling than Knack. Knack may have a higher floor than Kasparis because he's, you know, kind of got some polish. But, you know, Kasparis for me in terms of ceiling, it belongs in the best of this list.
Yeah, so. And I do agree with that one. Sorry, Gibson Long belongs there too, in my view. But we might disagree
on floor.
That one.
I don't know about his ceiling.
Mm. I mean, I understand that. I don't know if I see him as like a top 15 potential starter or something like that.
I mean, sinker first guys always like get a little bit of a more floor than ceiling designation.
Sure.
Although I did Logan give Webb Soriano, top 10, but Soriano you know? Throw Soriano. Yeah, well, Logan Webb is one, and then Soriano, I just gave him ceiling, but Soriano throws 99. Like, he literally sat 99.
Yeah, that was insane. Now I did want to mention. It's funny you said Ben Kasparius, and he's a Trade Athletics guy, and I've been following him for a bit. Remember actually talking with them because I was very skeptical of the way that he delivered the baseball, that is having this back foot tap. And I was like, this can't be reliable. Like, this can't be a consistent thing every time. And Jenna's release point change, if he's lifting his foot and tapping, then finding it again as he's in motion and delivering. And I actually got some great conversations with them about this, where they're like, Kasparis is incredibly athletic and it actually helps him stay consistent and he makes those micro adjustments as best as anyone else. And if he's stiff, then he's not able to make those. So that kind of delivery actually makes him more fluid.
What do you mean keeps by them in the flow? I don't really see it.
When he's in the full windup, he like lifts, he slides back his back foot and taps it like three times until he finds the footing.
I'm seeing a lot of stretch, I guess.
The other guy though, is Justin Rybalski. And I wasn't really expecting to have this because what do you know, it's like 5.8 extension. But what's so interesting is that he used to be this four-seamer slider guy. Like, that's what it was. It was like 50% four-seamers last year, sometimes 60% actually. And then having some sliders, that was it. But in his last game, Justin Rybalski, who was, by the way, was at like, what, 93 when he was doing that before, was 97 on his fastball with only 12 of those thrown. And it was like his fifth most thrown pitch. He all of a sudden just changed what he did. He threw six innings and 104
cutter pitches. Sinker guy suddenly.
He was a sinker cutter guy with sliders, four seamers, curveballs, changeups, all of those thrown at least 10 times. And I was just, who are you? You're throwing harder all of a sudden. Over three ticks harder on the four seamer, sinker at 95, 96 now. The cutter at 92 with 10 foul balls. And I'll go another time about my whole thought process of foul balls, but just generally, when you foul a ball off more than average, which is like 18%, that means it's taking away from one of the two outcomes, either whiffs or balls in play. And I think this was a case of it taking away from balls in play. So it allowed him to get a little bit deeper in accounts, which led to the three walks. But this is different and weird. And maybe there's something there. I mean, the left side throwing 97 miles per hour all of a sudden, that's kind of nuts.
Yeah.
17 inches of vert too.
94 location plus this year, 97 last year. And it's weird though, because the walk rates don't match up with that, but the prospects grade is a 50 future command for Rybalski from Fangraphs. Yeah, there's definitely something interesting here. I would add him in if I was like a rebuilding squad and maybe deeper dynasties and stuff. But the traditional projections, even ones that include stuff plus, are not good. And
oh yeah, well,
the triple A strikeout rate being 20%, not good. Last year, 16.9% in the major leagues, not good. So it's been a while since he's demonstrated a good strikeout rate. There's definitely something intriguing about his stuff and yeah, it being up in his last start and him playing around with the mix, maybe being a wide mix guy as opposed to being a fastball slider guy. But I think that the use case here is to be very careful and do it in places where you're kind of thinking more about the future than today.
100%. I just wanted to just get your quick take on that massive shift of who he was. And so why kind of, the prospect report or AAA numbers or the projections of it all just have kind of like, I agree with that assessment before this last game, because he's just like, this is not the same person that he was before. Is this person any good? Can we bank on that happening? I just think it's very curious and something for us to be aware of. What my understanding is for today, literally today on Wednesday, the 11th, or maybe it's tomorrow, but I think it's today, is that Kasparis is going to start this game and then Rybalski is going to follow. So we'll get another taste of it. And that does mean probably we'll see that 97 again, because it's going to be not 100 pitches.
Three innings or something.
Yeah, exactly. So very curious about that. Once again, the Dodgers.
I think the Dodgers new, guys.
Oh, my gosh. But I think that's everyone I wanted to mention, save for Mike Burrows, who I think is going to be good next year and has the pieces of like a good fastball that can go upstairs, a good changeup that sometimes is right there and beautiful against lefties, and a good breaking ball, and it's just not refined enough and not consistent enough. And he will certainly get some runway, I think, when there's an injury. I mean, I don't know. It's the Pirates. They'll trade something away, and Mike Burrows will be there. Finally, they'll trade away Bailey Falter.
Monsletsky is coming back up again. It's not even Bubba Chandler time.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, it's a bit of a dead zone fastball, though. I mean, 17 inches of IBB from a 53-degree arm slot. Yeah, I'd be almost interested in seeing what a sinker would look like from him if you just turn everything on its head and, like, you know, just do something different. Mm-hmm. I wonder if there's the possibility there, because he does have a changeup. So what if he could, you know, be sinker slider to righties and forcing change to lefties? That might be the wrinkle that works for him.
Definitely. But that, I think, is going to do it, you know, for this week of the craft. What have you been working on? What should we be on the lookout for from you?
I've got a piece coming out. I'm doing something with Ken Rosenthal about Sandy. Some of the stuff that I said today. I've got, apparently the ball is different again. So, we're getting comment from Major League Baseball about that as we speak. That should be out tomorrow. And I also have a piece tomorrow gauging the urgency for the teams that need to acquire a starting pitching asset the most. And I'll give you number one. I think it's pretty obvious. The Cubs.
Really?
I think it's the Cubs.
Interesting. Yeah. I don't know.
In terms of how they are projected and what they've gotten so far, they are a really good team that has gotten really far on a bottom 10 rotation.
The defense is elite.
Huh?
The defense.
Yeah, but I think, you know, all those things can be true. And then as you look forward to the postseason, yeah, be like, what if we put a better name at the top here?
Yeah, that's
and
a good point.
For them, it's maybe impact or bust. It's not so much about getting a fifth starter that can get them there. I think
no, definitely they want to go for a huge, big gun. Absolutely. Yeah.
They want a game.
Who do you, I mean, like, do you trade Cade Horton?
I might if the right name was on the table. Do I trade Cade Horton for Sandy?
No. No.
Yeah, not in the current state. It doesn't look
right. No, you don't. But I'm looking forward to that one. I'm also looking forward to MLB introducing the Savannah Bananas ball into the majors. I can't wait for that article. I'm sorry. Did I just spoil that one? I should have said
what
that.
What if catching foul balls meant they were out in the major leagues?
Oh, that would have been so great. Oh, my gosh. We go to Red Sox-Yankee games where Yankee fans are like slapping it out of the Red Sox.
No, they would be hitting each other. It'd be so bad. It would turn into like all-out warfare.
It would be absolutely horrible.
You'd see the thing with the guy with the baby, like, trying to catch it.
Oh, yeah, completely.
The guy, like, clocking the guy.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. It would be terrible. And, you know, of all the rule changes, I think actually one episode we need to have is rule changes and prepare it beforehand where we send it to our quants to see what the impact of the game is.
Oh, yeah.
I'm going to give you one to think about, guys. You can tweet at me about it. I put out a tweet about what if baseball changed where it was two balls for a walk and two balls for a strikeout. Sorry, two strikes for a strikeout. How would the entire landscape of baseball change? Not that this is a good idea or something like that. Just, I love how that would just change it, because you can't be the same ridiculous flamethrower guys. All the guys we talk about being chaotic wild would just be bad. You actually start to value 80% strike rate pitchers who can do that. And I think stuff comes down then. That's how I see it, but maybe not. I don't know. Yeah, look at that squinting face from Eno. Makes you think. Sure. We'll think about that before our next episode of The Craft. Sure. On the behalf of Eno, let me look it up. Saris. My name is Nick Pollock, and we'll talk about the craft pitching again next week.